content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And we're going to start with another essay from the book 80 Things to Do When You Turn 80. And of course, as I've said before, you don't have to wait until you're 80 to do these things. Ways to earn a little extra money and avoid boredom. This is by Art Koff, who graduated from Dartmouth College and did his postgraduate work at the University of Chicago Executive Program. I was in my late 60s when I founded RetiredBrains.com in 2003 after, quote, retiring from 40-plus years in advertising. I intended the site to provide content for older Americans in every area where this demographic had an interest. What I did not know at the time was where their interest lay. Now, some 13 years later, I'm able to check the traffic to each area of the site and not only see how many people visited, but also how long they spent on each page. What I have found out is somewhat surprising. Many older Americans are still interested in continuing to earn money, even those in their 80s and above. I suppose this should not be surprising as we are living longer, actually much longer. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, reports show that in 2015, life expectancy for men was 78.8 years and for women 81.2. However, what is important for your readers to know is that a man who has already reached 65 can expect to live on average until 84.3. A woman turning age 65 can expect to live on average until 86.6. In couples where both reach 65, one member is likely to live into his or her 90s. So what, you might ask, are the kinds of things someone my age or older might do to earn money and to keep themselves challenged? The best way to answer this is to tell you which pages of my website are getting the most traffic. Here they are. 1. Work at home. RetiredBrains.com/work at home. This is unquestionably the most visited area, as it is easier for a senior, and particularly for a senior in his or her 80s, to stay in their home and work. Okay, you might ask, but what kind of jobs? They are varied, and the list that follows is in order of the most to the least visited. Writing or editing, tutoring, direct selling, selling online, becoming a virtual agent, freelancing, telemarketing, medical transcription. There are all kinds of opportunities in each of these areas, and the site provides links to each. 2. Start a small business. RetiredBrains.com/employment-assistance/start-your-own-business. Most who visited this area were interested in starting a small business enterprise with a modest capital contribution, as people did not wish to dip into their retirement funds at this stage of their lives. While communicating with those who actually got their businesses off the ground, I asked if I could list them on the website so that others might see if they could use one of these ideas to start a business of their own. I took all this input and compiled a list, which is available at the URL address at the top of this section. 3. Take a part-time, temporary, project-based, or seasonal job. RetiredBrains.com/job-seekers. There are some in their 80s who continue to work full-time, like I do, but most who wish to continue working are not interested, and some are not able to spend 40-plus hours a week doing so. There are many opportunities to work less than full-time. Seasonal jobs are particularly attractive, whether it be working for a retailer during the holidays, for a tax preparer during tax season, on a golf course as a starter, a ranger, or even driving the ball pickup machine at the driving range. There are winter jobs at ski resorts, at lodges, and fall, spring, and summer jobs at ranches and resorts, and on tour boats where you can work as a cook, in reception, as a guide, etc. There are opportunities in national parks working for the concessionaires who run the hotels, restaurants, gift shops, and marinas. In Alaska, there's need for help seasonally at resorts and fishing and hunting lodges, as well as for the transportation and tourism companies. Coolworks.com has a list of these kinds of jobs specifically geared to what they refer to as the older and bolder seasonal job seeker. Coolworks.com/older-bolder. Here you can find out what it's like to work at some of these jobs and also talk to older workers who are willing to share their experiences and what they learned with you. 4. Volunteer and, in lieu of getting paid, get free or discounted accommodations and travel. retiredbrains.com/employment-assistance/volunteering. This section of my website has information on traveling and volunteering and lists many organizations looking for interested seniors. There are also volunteering jobs that allow you to work from home, particularly if you are computer literate. Jobs may include mentoring inner-city high school students, helping promote awareness of certain diseases, and doing fundraising. Some cruise lines look for hosts to be a fourth at the bridge table, dance with older single passengers, and fill in when there's an emergency if you are a physician or have medical skills. If you are a healthy, alert octogenarian, or even in your 90s and you're looking for a new challenge, you may be able to find an encore career that will help you make a bit of extra money on the side. Now let's move on to our heart health book, Centennial Living, Complete Guide to Heart Health Over 50. And the next issue we're going to talk about is the problem ventricular tachycardia, which, unlike in AFib, in ventricular tachycardia, the two lower chambers of the heart beat abnormally fast, up to 250 beats per minute. The heart is no longer an efficient pump. Blood pressure drops, you may pass out, and it could be fatal. If you don't lose consciousness, you might experience fatigue, shortness of breath, dizziness, lightheadedness, and sweating. The most common way ventricular tachycardia is diagnosed is through an EKG or wearing a Holter monitor to check your heart rhythm at home. Of course, there are times when ventricular tachycardia can't be meticulously confirmed. Sudden cardiac death, which is not the same as a heart attack, that presents with a loss of consciousness and no pulse, is either due to rapid ventricular tachycardia or ventricular fibrillation, unless proven otherwise. CPR should be initiated, and the diagnosis is made by an electrocardiogram. If an automatic external defibrillator, an AED, is available, that's when those defibrillator pads are used to try to shock the heart back into its normal rhythm. The treatment, if you're conscious and your blood pressure is either normal or slightly lower than normal, you may receive intravenous fluids to raise your blood pressure. That's typically the first option. You may also be given oxygen or medications to restore the heart to its normal rhythm. Once you're stabilized, your cardiologist will do some detective work. There could be congenital abnormalities of the heart's electrical system or structural abnormalities that involve the heart muscle or heart valves, resulting in ventricular tachycardia. In adults, the most common cause is coronary artery disease related to atherosclerosis. All the more reason to adjust your lifestyle now to keep your arteries clean. Depending on the findings, a number of treatment options exist, including stent placement or bypass surgery, heart-strengthening medication, such as Entresto, and or an implantable device called an internal cardioverter defibrillator, which can detect and correct most heart arrhythmias. The technology on devices continues to improve. In terms of the most recent advances, certain specialists, called electrophysiologists, can perform ventricular tachycardia ablations. They use a very detailed mapping of the heart and its electrical system to identify where the tachycardia originated. Sometimes it's for more than one area. They can ablate or destroy those areas in the goal to prevent recurrence. Here's a little sidebar. Bad code. If one parent has ventricular tachycardia, there's a 50% chance that you will inherit that gene. And the final article in this section, new tech imaging advances have made it easier than ever to take a peek inside your heart. And this problem is angina. How it's diagnosed. Angina is an imbalance between the supply and demand of oxygenated blood and the heart muscle. Whether you're exerting yourself or you're upset, your heart can't supply enough oxygenated blood. The lack of blood to the heart can result in pain. While 3/4 of angina sufferers experience chest pain upon exertion, the other 25% don't have significant symptoms, often due to diabetes and the impaired nerve sensations related to that. Angina is a symptom of a bigger problem. Atherosclerosis, which causes a reduction in blood and oxygen to the heart muscle. If your doctor suspects angina, he or she will likely order tests, which may include an EKG, echocardiogram, chest X-ray, stress test, blood test, and a CTA scan. You may also have a coronary angiography, X-rays that look at the inside of your heart. The treatment? Medication is becoming the first-line treatment for angina. That might include blood pressure drugs, statins, or drugs to widen blood vessels and reduce the blood's ability to clot. If medication isn't working, your physician may opt for angioplasty and stents to boost blood and oxygen flow in one or more vessels leading to the heart. Or they may opt for the big guns, a coronary artery bypass, where your surgeon uses a vein or artery from a different part of the body to create a detour around the blocked one. So after that bit of stressful information, let's move on to some healing powers of gratitude. So this time we're going to look at some of the specific ways to use this. To create lasting changes in the brain, you need to practice gratitude frequently and with emotional intensity. One, establish a gratitude baseline. Before you achieve advanced gratitude, it helps to get in the habit of being thankful for your good fortune. If we train ourselves to look for the gifts when life is going well, it will be easier to spot them during the rough times, says leading gratitude researcher Robert Emmons. Two, retrain your own brain. Tying thoughts of gratitude to the stressful events in your life may even change your neural pathways. A long-accepted concept in neuropsychology is that neurons that fire together wire together. So when your stress neurons fire, make your gratitude neurons do so too. This helps the two types connect, so that when stress hits, it will be easier for you to find something for which to be grateful. Gratitude can also counteract the many damaging effects of stress on the body, even improving heart health, found one study in the Journal of Psychological Science. In research done at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, people who regularly practiced loving-kindness meditation, which promotes love and compassion toward oneself and others, improved in one measure of heart health, better tone in their vagus nerve, which extends from the brainstem to the gut and regulates heart rate, breathing, and the relaxation response. Responding to the positive is a tough sell for the brain, which is programmed to suss out and avoid danger, says psychologist Rick Hansen, author of Hardwiring Happiness. The first rule of the wild is to eat lunch, not be lunch. But those avoidance systems are organized around opportunities and the response to threats, and they're generally more ancient than the systems that are organized around reward, he says. To create any lasting changes in the brain, the kinds that will make thankfulness your default emotion, protect you from stress, and increase resilience, you need to practice gratitude frequently and with emotional intensity. Try this. Have an experience of gratitude that lasts at least 20 seconds, feeling it in your body and giving yourself over to it to help it sink into your brain. Don't just be thankful for this beautiful sunset, he says. Sit with it for 20 seconds and be open to the feelings in your body. Feel the positive emotions related to gratitude, being glad that you're alive, grateful for your connection with other people. To build up neural encoding, it helps to feel the emotion in your body and even allow it to become intense. 3. Remember the hard stuff. If you're having trouble coming up with reasons to be grateful, try the technique Emmons recommends to help remind you of what you've gained from tragedy and loss. Think of your worst moments, your sorrows, your losses, your sadness, and then remember where you are now. You got through the worst day of your life. You got through the trauma. You endured the temptation. You survived the bad relationship. You're making your way out of the dark. He also encourages imagining a life in which you didn't meet your spouse, live in your current neighborhood, or encounter the people who became lifelong friends. That triggers what's called the George Bailey effect, after the character in Frank Capra's film It's a Wonderful Life, who, with help from a guardian angel named Clarence, learns how terrible life would have been for the people he loves if he had never been born. Imagining the absence of something good, it turns out, is even more effective at making us thankful than remembering our own good fortune. In one study, participants who wrote about ways in which a positive event may not have happened and of how they might never have met their romantic partners felt more positive and happier with their relationships than people who just described the events in a straightforward way. When we remember how difficult life used to be and how far we have come, we set up an explicit contrast in our minds, and this contrast is fertile ground for gratefulness. It builds up your resilience muscles, too, so you not only cope well but are able to find the good no matter how hidden it seems to be. Gratitude is an element of resilience in that it helps us recover from adversity. It's part of a person's psychological immune system that helps convert tragedy into opportunity, the ability to see the elements of one's life and even life itself as gifts is essential for this. Suffering can be a reason for gratefulness in that it shatters our illusions of self-sufficiency and teaches us what's truly important. In a 2013 Canadian study of 15 people with spinal cord injuries, most were grateful just to be alive. They had, after all, faced death. They reframed their post-traumatic lives as a second chance. Once they could deal with the practical obstacles, many of these people went on to start or finish college, launch new careers, or work as peer counselors for other spinal cord injury patients. They also told the researchers that because of their injuries, they began to deeply appreciate little things they once took for granted, like the sounds of birds and the joy of playing with their grandchildren. They realized they were no longer self-sufficient, which also led them to appreciate the help from family and friends. Knowing others are there for you makes you feel loved. The ability to bounce back after trauma is what psychologists call post-traumatic growth, a positive transformation that can occur when people go through serious stress, such as a chronic illness, an injury, or disaster. We're not talking about people being grateful for the cancer, the injury, or the disaster, but for what happens in the aftermath. what they've gained from struggling through the event. They tend to go through a process. Who am I? What kind of future do I want? And what makes sense to do with my time here on Earth now that this event has stopped me in my tracks? There are lessons learned and lives remade better than before. Ramsey admits that after his ordeals, he would throw himself a pity party. But over time, he began to notice the pattern. Whatever he thought of as the worst thing that had ever happened usually turned into something positive. After getting a cancer diagnosis, I came to appreciate life more. I've given my mortality a big old kiss, he jokes. So many people who have had their melanomas caught come up to me at our runs and say, "You saved my life." After nearly winning the Pulitzer Prize, I got downsized. But I found that when you lose your dream job, you just have another dream. Now, with this gift of hindsight, when something bad happens and I stop and say, "What's the good in this?" I have found that sometimes the worst moment of your life turns out to be the best. Now, I always have some healthy you advice. The Brady Munch, how the NFL's winningest player eats for excellence. This is from AARP, the magazine. It won't be long before Tom Brady gets his AARP membership notice in the mail. But while Brady is just 6 years shy of turning 50, the player with the most Super Bowl rings in history isn't planning his retirement. He's gearing up to defend yet another NFL championship title. A lot of his continued success on the field comes from what he puts on his plate, says Alex Guerrero, Brady's longtime personal coach. While Brady followed a very strict eating plan early in his career, as he's gotten older and we've built up a foundation, it's easier to incorporate more fun days into his diet. He describes Brady's diet as mostly plant-based. As you age, the more whole foods you eat, the better. Here, a day in the diet of the 44-year-old packed with fruits, vegetables, and proteins. Now, his rule of thumb here, indulge but limit. Brady will grab a small dessert, but rarely eats the whole thing. Stop eating at 7 p.m. This gives the body more time for rest and recovery. Avoid packaged food. The Brady Kitchen is free of boxes, cans, and bags. So here we go. Breakfast at 7 a.m., smoothie of almond milk, almond butter, banana, Brazil nuts, pumpkin, hemp, and chia seeds, blueberries, and organic plain yogurt. A snack, a protein bar around 11 a.m. Lunch around 1 to 1:30. A mainly plant-based meal that incorporates fish such as wild salmon with spiced cauliflower and pistachio arugula pesto, or fresh cod with salsa. Dinner, another mainly plant-based high-protein meal such as a quinoa tabbouleh salad or a fish taco bowl. Twice a week, a meal with red meat or poultry, think salad topped with steak, tips, or chicken. Dessert, dark chocolate in the form of a bar, chia seed pudding, cookie dipped in chocolate, or ice cream. Now, from the same magazine, we have 7 home improvement ideas. We won't be able to do all of them today, but we're going to get started. So it's 7 DIY ideas for your forever home. Home improvement stars reveal their fave projects to help you age right where you are. Yes, we were stuck at home for most of the past year and a half, but that doesn't mean we just couch potatoed. At some points during the pandemic, nearly 80% of homeowners were braving a DIY home project, a replacement, maintenance job, repair, or remodel, a Harvard University report revealed. There's no hard data on the results, but we're guessing it's somewhere between "look what I built" and "maybe you should call a plumber." For older Americans, making improvements isn't merely a COVID-era trend. Being able to adapt your home to fit your changing needs and circumstances is essential to living safely and comfortably now and over a lifetime. After all, the best way to remain at home tomorrow is to plan ahead today. With that in mind, AARP turned to the foremost experts in the U.S. on upgrades, build-outs, organizing, and aging at home designs for do-it-yourself advice on stylish, innovative solutions for your favorite, for your forever home. Plus, if the job gets beyond you, tips for hiring a contractor. Project number one, front door entrance makeover. We want our homes to adapt to our needs so we can stay as many years as possible. That includes entrances and exits that allow a smooth transition in and out of the property. But that doesn't mean you need to take a hit on curb appeal, he says, noting that bold design statements start at the front door. Try it yourself. Painting your door with a pop of color, yellow, blue, orange, or black, can make your house the most stylish one on the block. Modern, sophisticated, and clean. It's inexpensive, and the good news is, if you hate it, you can repaint it. Make the entry functional, too. For older visitors and first responders, it's nice to add large address numbers made of reflective or glow-in-the-dark material. Consider a new doorknob. Lever-style door handles are easier on the hands than a round knob or a thumb latch. If you need to call in a pro, hiring an electrician to add lighting to your entrance and front steps might cost a little, but it feels like a million-dollar fix-up. You could also put a bench or a table next to your front door for setting down items or for arriving deliveries. Also, remove screen doors or storm doors, since that's just another barrier to accessibility. And the front doors should be a minimum of 34 inches wide with swing-clear hinges to maximize the entry width. And next time, we'll move on to project number two. Now, another sports item about the idols. Wendell Scott, 1921 to 1990, the first black driver to win a race in the NASCAR Grand National Series in Jacksonville, Florida. What Wendell Scott did in that era showed blacks in this country that there is opportunity. If you are willing to endure and pay the price, while his accomplishments were muzzled by NASCAR, he cracked an opening in a door that had been nailed shut. And this was by Willie Ribbs, 66, who was the first black driver to race in the Indianapolis 500 in 1991. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.